Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is our regular business meeting for Tuesday, November 4th. The time now is 7 p.m. Liz, will you call the roll, please?
Certainly, council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Rasmussen, Camp, Davis, Gamble, and Gearden.
Thank you. Councilmember, and we heard from Councilmember Cuddeback earlier this evening. She's going to be out tonight. And we now have for the Pledge of Allegiance, Councilmember Davis, will you lead us?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, and before we begin this evening, just a couple of items. One, Councilmember Cuddeback and I believe Councilmember Gearing had both expressed an interest in having term limits discussed this evening. Would it be okay with council to have that moved perhaps to the 18th when Councilmember Cuddeback would be here as well?
We could have initial discussion and then we can, let's absolutely continue. Let's continue it if we could.
I have no problem moving it.
Yeah, I don't either. If we want to at least have something.
It was the two of you that put it on the agenda.
Yeah, let's wait. She's not here. It's a very good call. Let's wait.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. We're going to go ahead and move now into the public. Yes?
Can we talk about, I think her, she was, that was more about the elected. Do we want to talk about appointed official term limits? I think that was a separate issue, was the appointed, I think there was a Parks Board.
Correct.
That was separate. I actually met with Councilmember Cuddeback about this topic, and her concerns were with regard to elected and not with regard to appointed. So we can move the whole thing to the 18th, or we could have a discussion on part of it.
Just move the whole thing.
Sure. All right. I just thought I'd throw that out there. Yeah.
Sure. Good. Does anybody have disagreement with that? Okay. We'll go ahead and move that to the 18th then. All right. We're going to go ahead and now move on to the public hearing. And the public hearing tonight is on AB 14139. This is the first public hearing on the 2015 preliminary budget. Diane, do you have this?
Excuse me. This is merely an opportunity for the public to say whatever they would like in regards to the proposed 2015 budget. It's an opportunity for public input for the council's consideration. There will be two public hearings, one in this week and one in the next week.
Has anybody signed up to speak? Okay, is there anybody that would like to come forward and talk, provide citizen testimony on the budget? Anybody? Okay, I see none. Council? Councilmember Gearing?
I move to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Gearing, and was that a second from Councilmember Camp? Okay, any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Any discussion, Council? If there is none, is there a motion to close the public hearing?
So move.
Second. Okay. I have a first from Councilmember Camp, a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. We'll go ahead and now move on to comments from citizens. And before we begin with comments from citizens, I do want to note that we have a discussion item on under unfinished business, and this is AB 14144. This is a letter from Pastor Minnick regarding East Monroe, and I just want to note that there will be a presentation from Pastor Minnick and from Pace at that time. And so that will not occur during public comment. I know there was a question from Pace about that, and it'll be during the unfinished business portion. Okay. Council, do you have any exception to that?
No.
Okay. All right. And before we begin, for comments for citizens, it's important for every person for and against a particular issue to feel free to be here and to speak. I respectfully request that you help me maintain the decorum of these chambers. Please address your comments to the full council. And please direct your comments to the issue or policy of concern. We ask that the audience refrain from clapping or commenting from the floor. Lastly, please maintain this decorum as you leave the chambers. So again, this is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the council on any issue related to the city of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. And we do have a sign-in sheet. Liz, were there any signatures on it? Thank you. Okay, the first person that we have who has signed up to speak is Mr. Doug Hamer. Mr. Hamer, will you come forward and state your name and address for the record, please?
Doug Hamer, 11122 Calvin Road. Thanks for having me. As we all know, Aspen Manor Church Base Engineering for the preparation of the 2013 EIS. The Monroe, East Monroe property. Even so, it cost the city a considerable amount of time and money to legitimize a proposal that I and many others sincerely believe has the potential to do irreparable harm to the Monroe community. Whether or not the church pays for another EIS, rescinding your previous decision to walk away from this insanity will cost the city considerable time and taxpayer dollars. I went back and calculated in great detail the available compensatory flood storage capacity on the East Monroe property. And I would be happy to supply you with all those calculations at a later date. I did not have time to print them up for this meeting. This time, I figured in the entire 200-foot buffer surrounding the so-called developable 10.17 acres, for the western end where there are no elevations provided in the Sadler-Barnard 1999 survey, I used the elevations from the LIDAR survey, even though that survey is reading blackberry bushes in the area as solid ground. I also calculated in the eastern end of the property on the other side of the slough. Using just basic math, the total compensatory flood storage capacity available on the property is 21,938 cubic yards, which is considerably less than the 46,500 cubic yards the 2013 EIS called for. And that is considerably less than, again, using just basic math, it would actually take to raise that 10.17 acres above the floodplain. That figure is 65,630 cubic yards. All of which points to an incredible shrinking development potential for property that would cost many, many millions of dollars to develop. And I'd like to quote a couple of things from the Monroe Shoreline Master Program. We find under regulations, residential, number 13, residential, commercial, and industrial uses that may be damaged by flooding are prohibited in the 100-year floodplains. On 15, it says residential, commercial, and industrial subdivisions and short subdivisions shall be designed so that each lot will have a building site outside the 100-year floodplain. The subdivision's internal street system should be laid out to provide access to each lot that is passable by passenger car during a 100-year flood event. So to me, that sounds like you have to raise the roadbed as well as the parking area. And it would take about 1,000 feet of internal street system on the East Monroe property to access the buildable areas from where WashDOT will allow entry. Is that all going to be bridge work? Or will it require fill and compensatory flood storage as well? If there is a concern out there, crazy enough, to buy this property for commercial use, the project EIS will run into the same issue of insufficient compensatory flood storage. So the question I think you need to answer before proceeding here is, what's the point? Is it just to change the color of the map, as Mr. Gehring admits some people might see as simplistic? And I appreciate his willingness to step forward with an argument for it, and he's been consistent. But would it really function as a billboard, as Mr. Gehring thinks, announcing Monroe's willingness to do business? I think it will be far more likely it will act as a billboard telling developers that Monroe is crazy. Monroe's not above trying to pull faster on you, so beware. Monroe's government clearly does not have a contemporary vision of what it takes to create a vibrant retail environment within the city. So better steer clear of the place. And with that, I would just implore you once again.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next person that we have signed who has signed up is Sam Worshing. Mr. Worshing, will you come forward and state your name and address for the record?
Sam Worshing, 15002 210th Avenue Southeast, Monroe, Washington. I'm coming because, again, there are far people than me that have made good arguments about walking away from the East Monroe rezone. I'm curious why our council continues to want to divide the community and choose subjects that polarize and separate people. There's no community being built. There's no consensus. There's arguments. There's a lot of anger and names being called. I know that Pastor Minnick has received a fair amount of abuse in the public about this, fairly or unfairly. I know that the council has been called to task about this, fairly or unfairly, and I know the council also doesn't like people getting up and shaming them, and I hope that's not what I come off as doing. I don't understand why there's nothing that's being brought to you guys that's bringing people together. The whole point of having a small town is getting to live the American dream, to have an effect on things, to be able to see your communication, your discourse, your attempts to bridge the gap work out. I personally reached out through channels to you, Kurt, and I can't get you to communicate back to me. I would love to get to know you as a human being, because when I deal with you in this way, all I see is somebody who's obstinate, somebody who has no interest in bridging that gap and has no interest in community. And that's not going to get us anywhere. You know, we have this opportunity as a small town and a small community to really affect positive change, to really do some good things. And this issue keeps coming back up, like the people who speak against it, our voices don't count or aren't worth merit. There's time and time again that we have come up and wanted to feel like our voice was worth something, that we were being included in a conversation or a discussion, that there was some merit to the things that we were bringing to the table. And I continue to feel like the truant teenager that, you know, you need to go sit in the office or you are not allowed to be a part of this conversation. The real adults are working on this. You know, I don't feel like my voice is heard or listened to or cared about. And that's really upsetting because, again, I chose to live in a small town. And any of you who have gotten to know me should know that in spite of my obstinance and my difficulties in being an effective communicator, that I care about this community. I give more money and time than I know of to the causes for children and women and elderly and the pets, obviously. But we have this opportunity. And we're going to talk about, you know, well, we can justify this change in a map, but it really doesn't do anything to make our community stronger or better. It only favors one family. It doesn't really do anything to make Monroe a better place. We have an empty downtown. We've got a North Kelsey that's not filled up. We've got things going on in West Monroe that are not developed but are open all around that wonderful Jack in the Box that we have. There's empty places in our industrial areas. There's an Al Borland Park that is not being utilized as it could be as a tourist destination and a draw. Like, there's all these things that could be positive, could bring people together, that could, we don't have to sit with a table in between us and fight and argue about things, but we could actually come together, regardless of where we worship, regardless of where we shop, regardless of where we live in this community, that there is that opportunity that we have. And again, we're going to be arguing and talking about this, something that's been sex arrest, I don't know how many times in the 10 years that I've lived here. This isn't the first time this has come up, but we can't seem to let it go. And so I don't understand. And I don't feel like I'm stupid. I don't feel like I'm somebody who can't read things and understand what I'm reading. I don't feel like I'm somebody who has a conversation with somebody and doesn't understand the merits or the points of another person's argument. It's having a conversation with somebody, and my management leadership style is that iron sharpens iron. that you have to have conflicting views to come up with the best idea. You can't have a bunch of people whispering in your ear that you're the smartest or you're the brightest or you know what's going on, because you're never going to be able to fine-tune that idea to be best for everybody. And this is such a one-sided conversation. This is such a, again, I don't feel like I'm dumb, but I really feel like I'm the one that ate stupid pills, because I don't understand why, if we voted to let it go, it's back on the agenda. That all the money and time that the city spent is that going to be compensated? Are we going to, is the city going to have their tax coffers filled back up? Are we going to present the church with a bill for all the efforts beforehand if this space rezone goes through? I'd love to have something that we could all agree on. I'd love to be part of a community with you guys instead of at your mercy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Jensen, please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
Steve Jensen, 17041 155th Street Southeast here in Monroe, and I note that I am a member of the Planning Commission, but I'm not here under that capacity. I'm here as a private citizen. To start, I thought Halloween was last week, yet the ghost of East Monroe is haunting us still. On October 14th, during the meeting, I heard lots of discussion from city staff and others about the costs to do this. Estimates up there, $135,000 at the low end and higher. A piece of that cost was PACE's charges, but not all of it, from what I was understanding. I could be wrong, maybe they will explain differently this evening. Obviously, I haven't heard their presentation. But my understanding is that there are two additional studies that have to be done, a hydrology study and some geotechnical studies, which, thanks to city staff and their excellent work of seeking out third-party experts in the field, because city staff didn't know, they got estimates of $50,000 for each of those studies. I don't see that as part of PACE's work. So even if all of PACE's bill is paid, all that's going to do is then say, all right, PACE is going to say, we're paid, but now we need these studies. City of Monroe, please give them to us. And are you going to find yourselves on the hook for $100,000 or more, even though PACE's bill has been paid? And then there's more to the cost of the city, not just dollars. There's time that the staff can spend on this, and you can't really track that very well. And the labor itself and everything else involved. And finally, the first comment brought this up, and I want to reiterate it because I felt the same thing. So if this goes through, you end up with another red spot on the map for commercial. What does that do? What benefit is that to the city? Because there is no project right now, so we don't see a benefit. In fact, I see it as a liability myself. I agree with the first comment that that's going to taint and tarnish this city's reputation, because prospective developers and commercial properties might say, oh, what has the city of Monroe got for us that we could look at? They'll see a big map, say, oh, lots of space. They might start even spending money on doing things, and then find out, oh, a big chunk of this map's over here, and it's ridiculous to build on or cost prohibitive. Are they going to walk away? We may never even know that they were looking at Monroe. It's one of those you can't put your finger on, but I sense that having inaccurate red spots on the map, just because it makes the map look more full of red, isn't doing the city any good. And I want to wrap up what this visual aid is for. This is the current comprehensive plan. My understanding is that by law, the city has to redo this by June 30th next year. That is less than 8 months. And we've got some outside consultants or third-party people helping put some initial things together, but we really haven't gotten our feet into this. Are you prepared, and is the city staff prepared, to go through every page of a document equally this big? It's not just a portion that's being redone, the whole thing is being redone. Are you prepared to do this in 8 months? And do we really think the city staff can do this in 8 months if they have to also be spending time pulling more paperwork for PACE or for other prospective engineers that might be doing studies on the property? I don't see it happening. I can just comment that as being on the Planning Commission, I saw city staff being taxed last fall with issues of this coming and getting in the way of other work that needed to be done. Regardless of dollars spent on city staff, it was the time. We just didn't have the time. We don't have the time now to take on another big piece of this. So I ask that, again, you let this go. Let it be. Thank you.
Thank you. The next person that we have signed up to speak is Lowell Anderson. Mr. Anderson, will you come forward and state your name and address for the record?
Property owner's desire to effect a rezone to enhance the value of the land, we do not believe the proposed rezone is in the best interest of the borough. The Growth Management Hearing Board review of the inadequate PACE Engineering Environmental Impact Statement indicates that approximately 75% of the 43-acre site is undevelopable or designated for protection as critical areas and buffers. As such, only 11 acres could be developed. Our study indicates an accurate topographical survey will prove substantially less acres are available for development than the 11 acres being discussed. It is unrealistic to believe a developer will spend millions of dollars on mitigation and wait several years for permits to develop a few acres of floodplain. The inadequate PACE Engineering Environmental Impact Statement acknowledges that the site hosts an array of environmental challenges. We have been raising these environmental challenges for several years, and most of our issues have fallen on deaf ears of many of our city's political leaders. However, the Growth Management Hearing Board is listening, and these issues will be addressed. It is our position that the city should not entertain any proposed rezone without a specific development proposal. Why open Pandora's box given the many environmental issues and critical areas that would be affected by any commercial development of the property without a specific development proposal in hand? You can be assured that those of us who have been staunchly opposed to the rezone will remain opposed to any attempts to develop the property for commercial purposes. A number of questions continue to be raised by the city's efforts to effect this rezone, including, and when I'm done here, I want to give you all a copy of these questions because I expect answers. I'm going to hold you accountable, or we will hold you accountable. Question number one, whose interests are actually being served by the proposed rezone? The narrow interests of the property owner or the broader interests of the city of Monroe? What is the economic viability and realistic chances of building 11 out of 43 acres with essentially no limited access to Highway 2 and that has no access to public facilities such as water, sewer, and other public utilities? What is the rush to effect a rezone when Monroe, within the city boundaries, has plenty of available commercial land and numerous empty buildings that can be utilized for commercial property development? Why not leave the property in its current limited open space designation, which is consistent with a limited open space designation as it lacks the full scope of public services and facilities necessary to support urban development and is severely impacted by critical areas? What will the cost of developing this 11-acre usable parcel of commercial property justify the occurrence of considerable environmental mitigation, over 1 mile of sewer and water lines and related work, highway traffic mitigation costs, and all the attendance mitigation costs relating to construction and ongoing operation on the 11-acre site? Six, can adjoining property owners be assured that any commercial development will not result in erosion, slope degradation, and landslides? Can council members justify spending $195,000 or $427,000 of taxpayer money on this non-project rezone, then adding additional city expense on another environmental impact statement? Note, non-project means no one is waiting to develop the property, therefore no return on your investment. We believe these answers need to be fully addressed by the city council and the mayor prior to reaching any final decision with respect to the rezone. Respectfully, Lowell Anderson and others. So now then, here is the questions. I'd like to pass these out and have each one of you to have one for your discussion. I'd also like to give the mayor a copy of my little speech here so that when we have that discussion, you can hand that down to me, please. So that when you have your discussion on Monroe, you have that to go.
Thank you. The next person that we have up to speak is Mr. Bill Davison. Mr. Bill Davison, will you come forward and state your name for the record?
I'm not excited.
My name is Bill Davison. I live at 611 West Main Street in Monroe, Washington. I came to Monroe in 1963, moved here with my family, and have raised them in our home on Main Street. In that time, I've heard three great speeches. I've heard one by John Kennedy, where he asked not what he could do for us. I've heard one by Martin Luther King about having a dream. And I've heard one from one of our council members about it's a sad day in Monroe. To me, it is a sad day in Monroe. This issue is like a snake with its head cut off, and the head keeps looking for somebody else to bite. It's time for it to die. There is no benefit to the citizens of Monroe for this to go forward. No red spot on the map is worth the dissension that has been caused by this. Secondly, I do have a dream. I have a dream that there will be a day when common sense will prevail, that we will allow our intellectual to override our heart, if that's what's driving you, so that common sense, which would say this is an unusable site, would prevail. I don't know what else to say. I'm tired of coming here. I can't count the times I've been here to talk on this issue. I'm not coming back. This is the end of it. I do want you to look back on your actions of the last month. And if this comes up tonight for any kind of a vote, I want you to understand that there is a member of your council vacant. There is a seat vacant tonight, and you have all been so concerned about making decisions with a full council that I don't think that any decision made tonight would have any validity. My last point is that 3 weeks ago, there was a vote taken on this. And I was here, I listened to the motion. It seemed to me that included in the motion was something to the effect that we notify the state of the decision. Has that been done?
No, not yet.
Why not?
Because a resolution is being drafted.
Why do we need a resolution? Let him answer. Tell us why we need a resolution.
We can get into that during the discussion. This is intended for public comment, Mr. Davison.
It is a public comment. There are a lot of people that want to know why it hasn't happened. Does the vote of the council mean nothing? Does the lawyer come in and say, oh no, we can't do that, we need more? Give them another chance. I don't think so. Thanks for your attention.
Thank you.
Okay, is there anybody else that is a member of the audience that would like to come forward and speak? Come on up and please state your name and address for the record.
Hi, I'm Chad McGammon, 21624 Calvin Road. I didn't really come here very prepared tonight. I apologize for that, but I'm a citizen. I'm going to speak kind of what comes to mind. The first thing that came to mind is today's elections, right? This is one we should all come out as a public to voice what opinions we might have. The next thing that came out is that my third grade son announced that he's running for student council. We didn't ask him to do that. He just volunteered to do that. So, you know, if he wants to do that, I should at least come here and speak. You know, I felt like some of the other members that, you know, I've spent numerous hours. I've talked up here 10, 15 times, and a lot of my comments, they never do get addressed. Like, I don't get answers to a lot of my statements. The one thing that I do continue to see is that this project continues to drag on and on and on. It started long before I began in this journey, you know, and, which has been over the last 4 or 5 years myself. And you know, if I count just my hours and my billable hours, I would probably be up to $10,000 myself in billable time on this. And Lowell would probably be up to, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars in his time if he billed it like a lawyer would or so. And a lot of other citizens are in the same boat. You know, we're all trying to voice our opinions, but at the same time, we just don't get answers. Finally, we heard answers that we're going to drop the project. But now it's back up again. I just don't understand that. And, you know, so we change the color on the map. What's going to happen next? The next thing is going to be if they could ever find anybody that thinks it's possible to actually build on that site, well, we're going to be back in here again fighting this thing, because I don't want my house sliding down the hill. And I'm sure no one else does that lives up there either. So we're going to be back in here and making sure that everything's done the right way. I mean, we've all seen the Oso landslide. There's been floods in similar type scenarios down south where they filled in land and rivers overflowed and still flooded the areas. You know, I just think we should learn from some of the things that have happened, and there's so many better areas in this city to build. It just doesn't make sense to me. But I went around and talked to a lot of different citizens. They're not here tonight. You know, they should be. If we could get everybody that I've talked to that's opposed to the city spending additional money on this, they wouldn't fit in the city block. You know, I have yet to run into anybody that wants the city spending another dime on this project. They may not all agree whether the rezone makes sense or not, but everybody I've talked to agrees that we shouldn't spend another dime on this. That's kind of all I really have, so I'll save a few minutes of time there, but I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak? Yes, sir. Speak when they speak. Yes, sir. Anybody else? Aaron? Or? Please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
Brandy Blair, 328 South Lewis Street. I was a petitioner along with Bill Anderson to the Growth Management Hearing Board, which is comprised of experts on the application of the Growth Management Act. They found that the EIS that the city relied upon to make their informed decision on this issue was inadequate. This EIS was created by PACE. PACE stands by their EIS stating that they went above and beyond. In reality, they did not hit the minimum standard. The EIS is not just a checkbox. It should be an impartial review of the true impacts of a development. This area is a wetland with a salmon bearing stream in the floodplain. It's not an issue of protecting someone's view. Protecting critical areas is important to the health and livelihood of all Washington residents. Please give the information tonight presented by PACE the weight that it deserves. It is the weight of the proponent. It's a sales pitch by the property owner. We elect you to be stewards and to make informed decisions that are in the best interest of the citizens of Monroe. Please put an end to the funding of a private real estate deal that impacts critical areas. Developing a wetland is not in the best interest of Monroe, it's in the best interest of Thomas Smith. This is not just a change to the color of the map.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak? Come on forward, Aaron. Please state your name for the record and your address.
Thomas Minnick founded the church and has been its pastor for over 30 years. I shared a relatively close relationship with Brother Minnick, as we call him, and his family throughout the late 80s and 90s. I joined him and other teen boys and dads on mission trips and hunting trips in Eastern Washington, as well as many annual week-long family camps where many families from the church took an entire week off for an annual retreat together. The church was very much my community, and I felt very loved and cared for by them. I dare say the feeling went both ways. I have watched the ongoing saga of the East Monroe rezone by the pages of this paper with interest and mixed feelings living on the other side of the world. Although I was a close inner member of Heritage for many years, from my early teens to my late 20s, my parting with the church was not on the best of terms, and my feeling toward Pastor Minnick and Heritage remained complicated. When I left the church in early 2001, I was shunned by most of the congregation, and many of whom had been my only community for years to come, but they suddenly didn't want much of anything to do with me. Reports of anger on both sides of the rezone were hardly surprising to me. While he was certainly very caring and giving, the Tom Bennett of my experience was a man who framed the world in terms of us versus them. He felt envy and superior toward those who believed differently from him. The Heritage I grew up in was a place of amazing love, graciousness, and care for insiders. We felt very safe, that if anything were to happen for us, the church would be there to support us. But the flip side of this point was a fierce fundamentalism. One had to stay inside the range of accepted beliefs. Those who wanted outside that range were certainly pulled up short, and many left over the years unwilling or unable to operate within the belief constraints. We thought of those who left as being part of the dangerous outside world, outside of God's will, as we prayed for, but not associated with, and thus they repented. This fundamentalism included a kind of encompassing belief structure, not only religious beliefs, but also political beliefs that prescribed. So, for example, the extreme right-wing Republican candidate for Washington State Governor in 1996, Alan Croswell, was a longtime member of the congregation. Among the political beliefs so fiercely held was a strong property rights tenet. Tom Minnick once told me, for instance, that a business owner should certainly have the right to serve and not serve exactly who they wanted, and if this right extended to churches, to choices about the race of their customers. He and Ellen Croswell wanted to privatize the University of Washington, selling it to the highest bidder. This intense us versus them mentality painted the world as a relatively hostile place where the much larger group of people who held opposing religious and political beliefs would certainly be against us. And we as a church were a small persecuted minority in the light, with God on our side, but very much the persecuted minority. I can see now from a slightly wider perspective, having successfully assimilated into a foreign culture, how this kind of framing can cause one to act in ways that lead to having a lot of enemies. This is why I'm highly surprised by the reports of the intense anger being displayed on both sides of this issue at the recent city council meeting. Nor am I surprised by Tom Bennett screaming of the entire saga as one in which he would be unfairly persecuted minority. I grew up in that mindset at church for more than a decade, and I have to say, I'm super delighted after lots of therapy and hard personal work to have mostly escaped it and to be able to see others who disagree with me as beautiful, worthwhile human beings whose beliefs, religious, or political are certainly at least as tenable as my own. It was quite a letter, I thought, and seems to speak to somebody that maybe doesn't necessarily, or a group that doesn't necessarily operate within the rule of law that was bound by a different covenant. And I just hope that all of you are able to, hopefully able to have enough distance to try to just see this on in practical terms and legal terms.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak? Anybody else? Okay. We're going to go ahead and move from public comment now to the consent agenda. Councilmember Gehring.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Call that one.
Call that one.
Councilmember Gamble has a second. I heard you because you were closer a little bit more. So I have a first from Councilmember Gehring, a second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 6-0. Next item on the agenda is unfinished business, and this is AB 14-144. It's discussion, and this is regarding the letter from Pastor Minnick regarding East Monroe. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. I was one of the people that had asked if council was interested in having a discussion about the letter that came, which is why we have that tonight. Just for the record, there is no action that was planned for this evening. It was a discussion to see whether or not there was any interest in perhaps someone consider something differently based on the letter that we received. That's the purpose of the agenda item tonight. Also, to be able to hear from Pace, we had seen numbers, had some original numbers, but we'd never really heard a breakdown. We'd had the petite numbers that we had seen before, and so just being thorough, being able to see that. Councilmember Cunback is not here tonight. But again, there was no action planned for this evening. It was a discussion on the topic. So a little bit of the background, since there were some questions about that. So that's where we're at. So I didn't know if there was. I'll give the floor back to you. I just wanted to make sure that we start off with that. Yeah.
Okay. So we do have a presentation that Pace is going to come forward and give, and we have not yet. So I understand the scope was transmitted this afternoon.
Yes. Okay. I do have a handout for you. I think Minnick wanted to say a few words first.
Okay.
I can have you around this. Why don't you go ahead and talk now about that?
My name is Thomas Minnick, 1379 194 Yard Southeast. Throughout this process, I've remained pretty quiet and, for the most part, allowed the consultants to speak. But it gets more and more difficult as these kind of meetings happen. I think it's worth noting that the animus and the vitriol in this whole issue has been one-sided entirely. I think it's, in fact, incredibly disingenuous to come up here and complain about dissension when that complaint is being lodged by the very people who have created the dissension. And whether in the newspapers where we have been crucified repeatedly, lied about, we've never responded in anger, and I don't tonight, but nobody from Heritage has accosted anybody Nobody from Heritage has beaten on their vehicles as they try to leave the parking lot. All of that anger has been on one side. I also think it's incredibly disingenuous for the same people to keep coming up here time after time, meeting after meeting, and complaining about the cost to the city. Because surely everybody understands the cost they're talking about is what they caused. We have paid our freight all the way through this. We're in fact stepping up now to pay for an additional work product that will be the city's. And yet people are still complaining about the cost. These costs have all been caused and generated by the appeals that have been brought by the people that are complaining about the cost. And so I still have trouble believing this stuff is real when I listen to it. And finally, before Susan comes, I think it's important to say this. The city of Monroe has a process for citizen-initiated comp plan amendments and rezones. We didn't create the process. Believe me, if we did, it would be simpler than this one is. But we went through the process, all the way through a torturous 3.5-year process. We did everything we were asked to do, and more. We operated in good faith every step of the way.
I don't remember if you put together a number.
And at the end of that 3.5-year process, by an overwhelming majority, both the Planning Commission and the City Council voted to rezone the property. We ask you to continue to operate in good faith with us. It's the city's process. We went through it. It's torturous. It was way too long, obscenely expensive. But we did it. And so we think it's not too much to ask that you operate in good faith with us at this stage. Do not let the voices of a few people cause you to undo 3.5 years of work and an enormous amount of expense. We were really dismayed a few weeks ago when the council voted to do that. They voted that way based on the figures that the staff brought. And so, as disappointed and troubled as we were by that, we felt like we would once again do something that I believe is extraordinary, perhaps unique, and that is step up and pay for the costs of these professional fees. And so for everyone who voted to undo that 3.5 years of work based on your concerns over those costs, then we have taken steps to alleviate that. And so I would ask you to support our need to respond to the board, answer these questions, and have that rezoned reinstated. So thank you. Susan has information.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Susan Boyd, Pace Engineers, a principal with Pace and one of the primary authors of the draft and final EIS that was prepared for the rezone. I'm handing out tonight a piece of paper The one I want to call your attention to most is the 11 by 17 piece of paper, which sort of summarizes the road management hearing board's compliance requirements. And it puts forth what we propose to do to comply. As you look through the back in front of this paper, you'll see that there were 12 issues brought forth, 13 if you count something that was brought up in the order. All but two of them were dismissed. That formed the premise of us developing the scope of work for compliance and growth management hearing board. So that, with that little bit of introduction, I'm here tonight in what I hope is the final stage of this process. As you know, Crossman has indicated his willingness to pay our costs associated with defending the city's decision to rezone with East Monroe property. Over the past several weeks, we've worked in-house and with experts in the field where questions remain, and with land use attorneys to identify whether or not we could answer these questions expediently, effectively, and to the satisfaction of the Growth Management Hearing Board compliance order. In particular, we worked with JMMK, a land use law firm that's highly respected out of Bellevue, Washington, that has specialists that have significant experience with the Growth Management Board. So we wanted their take on this. Is this a compliance order that we will actually be able to comply with in a reasonable amount of time and with a reasonable amount of money? And what is the likelihood of satisfying their order for them to reconsider their position on the reason? Trisna Tanis is here with us tonight. She is an attorney from JMMK, and if you have questions for her, please feel free to ask. In short, as I mentioned, this matrix on the 11 by 17 paper that I handed out is a response to the 12 issues that were raised. If you go through those and read through it, most everything was dismissed. Additional information was asked for in relation to the characterization of the critical area habitat, the addition of a no action / no development alternative. The reason, or the EIS as it stands, addresses a no action alternative that includes development under the existing zoning that's on the property. That's typically what's done in these cases. They ask for another alternative. We have the information for that alternative, and it's easy for us to clarify and document. They also ask for additional clarification on flood hazard and hydrology. I do want to be really clear that this property is not in the floodplain. It's not in the floodplain. So we keep hearing that, but according to FEMA and according to city code, it's excluded from the floodplain. Could it be susceptible to flooding? Yes. Would there be some silt required on the property? Yes. Could compensatory storage be provided to address the development on the property? Yes. Does it have to be open storage with excavating land out along the streams or some of the other things that were talked about earlier? No. There's all kinds of ways to provide safety from flood hazards. That includes controlling water and underground storage facilities, finding other compensatory storage within your basin. There's a lot of mitigation and avoidance measures that are available to us. Those weren't brought out in the original FEIS, draft EIS, because it's a non-project action. But we've looked at them. We know what those mitigation measures are. We know it's available under your code, under DOE requirements, and under FEMA requirements and Army Corps of Engineer requirements. Typically, that doesn't go into a non-project EIS. We have information that we can supplement to demonstrate the case, if you will. So flood hazard and hydrology will be addressed. Landslide hazards will be further vetted to answer the questions that have been raised. We've retained geoengineers. They helped us on the draft and final EIS. They're the experts in the field, as far as I'm concerned, one of the best firms around for this, to clarify what potential issues that are there and whether or not your code addresses within protection of the hillside with setbacks as they're listed. We'll get 400 feet, or I don't know the exact number. We're a considerable distance away from the toe of that slope. But I do agree, the demonstration of the measures that can be employed to protect the stream can be expanded on in the supplemental documentation, and we're prepared to do that. So those were the three big things that were addressed in terms of additional information that was requested. Earlier tonight, we heard some confusion over the additional studies and paces, 195,000. That the draft estimate that you saw earlier this month had nothing to do with PACE. That was from an outside consultant that, in my view, would be essentially starting over on the property, where we would be continuing on the property. I'm not really surprised at their cost if they were starting over. We're just bringing things out of our files and supplementing with additional information as required. We are prepared to address everything that is raised in the growth management hearings board decision. Again, provide the additional information on the no action alternative, additional discussion to not only meet the growth management hearing board, but also to meet the city's requirements and city staff's requirements in reconfirming their decision for the rezone. So I present this little summary and hope that you'll look through it and recognize how many of the things that keep getting brought up have been repeatedly dismissed throughout the appeals process. In addition, I've provided a scope of work that's a lot more detailed. This is an expansion of something that I have been working on over the past couple of months. And I think it more closely reflects the level of detail that the city put forth in the critique draft, if you will. PACE had prepared a more general scope of work several weeks ago, right out of the gun, sort of a reactionary to the growth management board decision. It was very generalized. This is more detailed. I look forward to working with the city staff to work through any additional details or questions that they have. Again, our attorneys and our interpretation of the growth management hearings board and our interpretation of the scope that was developed by Pertee, I think this addresses their requirements and their needs. So I look forward to working with them on that. I also want to point out that it's not just PACE that's working on this. There's all kinds of sub-consultants, there's all kinds of experts. They're registered professional engineers and scientists. They put their stamps on these documents for a reason. Sometimes this whole process has been characterized as just PACE's opinion. It's not that. It's a professional opinion. It's a professional study, and we stand behind it. In addition, everything that's done will be consistent with the standard engineering practices and it's just a municipal code of Monroe. So there's a lot of restrictions in place in Monroe for critical areas. We recognize those. 43 acres, 3/4 of it is being reserved to protect those critical areas. I think that's pretty reflective of how respectful we are of the critical nature of some portions of the site. I do want to point out that this remains a non-project action. There still is no specific development proposal to evaluate in terms of precise impact. And that detailed analysis remains a function of future development proposals. We all realize that the permit process is where many things get worked out. Still, I think that we are in a position where we can go beyond what a typical non-project EIS requires and discuss specific avoidance and mitigation measures that will likely be attached to future development. I hope that will put people's minds at ease a little bit and realize that this property is not going to be developed in violation of any codes or put the environment or surrounding areas at risk. Again, we look forward to refining the scope and fine-tuning it. Two things we need at this time, this agreement to allow the property owner to finance his application through this last little stage and request an extension of the management hearing board compliance schedule so we can do that. So I don't know if I can answer any questions or how else can I help?
Okay. Let me see. Let's first see if staff has anything to say, because I know that they met with you last week as well. Brad or Paul or Jean, do you have anything
Just that we just got this at 6:30 this afternoon, or this evening, you know, when we came to the meeting, so we haven't had time to review it to see if it complies with everything that we think needs to be done to the growth engineering board fast. So we'll be taking it next week or the end of this week and talking to the case and see the responsible official to go over it and make sure that everything is copacetic.
So as you're asking questions, please be aware of that, that staff has not had an opportunity to review the material yet. So, council members, anything else from staff? Okay, council member Gehring.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And I really appreciate this information again. Yeah. We'll take a look at it, looking at it as you talk. The big concern, as we heard last time, was about cost. And we had a large estimate here, whether that was... it sounds like that was kind of a starting over price. Obviously, there's still a price associated with continuing, so you could cross the EIS portion off. I guess I'm curious what that leaves. That would leave legal costs. Essentially, would leave legal costs.
Right.
So I guess just my you know, what would that number be?
Right.
If there's some way to estimate that for council's consideration on, obviously there's still a cost to the city involved with this, and I want to make sure we have this, and this is really good information about what actually needs to be done, much less than if Pertit was doing it starting over, because it's a continuation. What else? What are the other bottom line numbers that we'd be dealing with?
Okay, so
we have it all.
I know that a number was talked about at one point in time. What sort of price would we be looking at from legal?
Council, I'm afraid I can't really estimate that. There are so many variables potentially at work here. I have no idea. As Mr. Feilberg indicated, what the scope of work will involve, I'd be happy to review that with staff, but like staff, I just received the document for the first time tonight. Certainly haven't had an opportunity to verify that by reference to the Growth Board's decision and the applicable legal framework. But the most critical point are the variables that are outside of the city's control. Potential for future legal challenges, the extent and complexity of those, the length of any future Growth Board proceedings, the number, frequency, intensity of communications with staff, and their need for legal counsel and advice throughout the process. So it would presumably be a substantial number. I just don't know what that would be. And I'm sorry, I can't be more definitive
it's
than
okay.
that.
You know, the ballpark is all this. That's it for now. I'm hoping to hear from the council members. Thank you.
Council members, do you have any other questions for Pace or for the property owner or for staff? Councilmember Gamble and then Councilmember Hanford.
So, Pastor Minnick, I was just interested because we did receive a letter, you know, originally that you were willing to contribute up to, I think it was $15,000 or $30,000 when we were originally considering this. What brought the change? Because, I mean, when I look at, you know, the dollars, and so I have a lot of questions around, okay, you're going to cover Pace. Does that mean all the subcontractors? Does that mean everything associated with Pace Direction? And the congregation, would we be willing to support up to $100,000 to $200,000 project? If, I know you're saying that's a lot less. I get that. I understand.
Well, first of all, to answer your first question, the thing that changed is you guys voted not to move forward. And we frankly thought, and by the way, it's not me, it's our church.
Right.
It's not my property. We frankly thought that being willing to assume half of the costs was really generous on our part. I'm pretty certain everybody's not expected to do that. And so, the thing that changed was that with your vote to stop the process, undoing the rezoning, it seemed the only thing we could do to be able to get back before the board and answer their questions was to assume all the costs. Everybody that spoke the night when that vote was taken indicated that their issue was the cost. And so our church decided grudgingly that we would prepare for that. And can I just say again, I think there is an issue of good faith here. We went through this process based on the fact that the initial votes taken, the staff was supportive of this process. The votes taken in the Planning Commission overwhelmingly, yes, for the rezone. The votes taken in the council overwhelmingly, yes, to the rezone. And when the hearing examiner said the EIS is not sufficient, we spent $170,000 in good faith because the city had given us every indication this is a yes, we're supportive of this. And so, you know, I would just urge you to feel like you have a responsibility to deal with us in good faith as well. And so, rather than all of that expense and time we wasted, we felt like this is what we had to do. And secondly, all of the other costs, contrary to what was mentioned earlier tonight, those subcontractors, the subconsultants, all of those things will be wrapped into this. PACE will be contracting all of that, supervising all the subcontractors. We'll receive the one bill from PACE to all. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, and I guess the only other piece is there's just, I've been the operations elder, and you know, that's a lot of money for, you know, exactly. So that's where I'm, you know, just I'm questioning, is there, I mean, what's, is there a cap, is there a budget that you're running up against? I'm concerned
that you've been up against it for a while now.
That's my concern.
Yeah,
right.
So,
and then I guess
may I just, at the risk of being repetitive here,
sure.
These costs were not generated by us. We're simply left to clean up.
I understand and I appreciate that. I guess the other piece, though, is that when we talk about the, but that is part of the process, like it or not, whether I agree with the opposition or you, that is part of the process, you know, for them to do it. And that's part of our job is to determine, you know, hey, do we have the money to go? We've done it on a lot of stuff. We think it's going to go to litigation on either side. I mean, I voted on stuff that I, you know, may be passionate of, you know, personally think, you know what, we should do that. But at the same time, I can't make, you know, the vote because I know that the cost is, that's going to be associated with it is not in the best interest of the city, even though I may personally think that we should do that. So that I get that. But that is a part of the process. They're right to come forward and to, and you know, and to do that, and I understand your position, you know, on side of that. I would have the same opinion if I were in your shoes. But we are in the situation that we're in right now, and we do have to make a decision based off of what we have in the coffers in order to move forward with this, you know, or not. That's reality. And I know I'm here at the very end, and you know, I wasn't the last 3 years. I wasn't here from the onset. But that's why I'm asking the questions, trying to understand, and I get, but that, you know, that is a big change. I understand, but when that question was asked originally, when you gave us the letter, that was the ask at that time was, you know, because the part that I keep struggling with, and I know it's been brought up, and I know I've said it several times on the record, beyond the cost, is that, you know, hey, it would be a lot easier for me to I don't see the benefit on the, you know, on the back to the city. And I understand the benefit, and that's just from the, you know, everything else I've ever voted on since I've been on here, whether, you know, if it was a contentious issue of a wakeboard park, whatever, that you name it, there was a tangible thing at the other end of the rainbow that you could agree or disagree, but there was a tangible thing that I could see a benefit to a certain populace within the city. And so that's what I'm struggling with.
And quickly, if I can just respond to that.
Sure.
Frankly, a significant retailer in that property is the best way for the city to get benefit from that property. As it sits right now, the city gets no benefit from it. But doing what we propose to do does allow every year the city to get significant tax revenues, sales tax revenues.
See, that's the piece I'm missing. Typically there would be a project oriented where there's an actual, we know what the retailer is. It's a lot easier to make that investment from a city, perspective or, whatever, when you know that that's what's on the other end. When right now we talk about changing, you just coined the term changing the color of the map.
Indeed.
I just have a hard time at what cost at just changing the color of map without having some sort of project oriented, around that.
I think that's just part of the changing economics of this era. It's hard to get a property owner to propose a full project without zoning that's consistent with what they're doing. So it's development and developers are changing, and this is part of that, I think.
Okay. Thank you, Pastor Manning. I appreciate answering. Is it? That's right.
I did want to just mention as well that when we talked about the legal costs, one of our thoughts was by bringing JMMK on board as land use specialist, that would help reduce that level of effort in the document we produced is already vetted by a land use attorney, making your review hopefully and the city's review easier and simpler and reducing the costs overall. Just expediting everybody's efforts and lowering costs overall.
So. Before I give the floor back to Councilmember Gamble to see if he has anything else, our attorney has something to say.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And just adding on to Ms. Boyd's comments, certainly there is, a benefit to having an additional review and assistance by the applicant or landowners. A legal team, that was a factor that was lacking during the previous proceedings. Also, just to state for the record, and I hope this is self-evident, but the council always retains its discretion to hire legal counsel, special legal counsel, for any project that comes before it. So if the council, for whatever reason, wanted to go and find a different attorney for this particular proceeding and any litigation ensuing from it, that is entirely within your prerogative to do that. And I'd be happy to take a second chair, a supportive role, if that's the council's preference. But state again for the record, to the extent that the council does proceed forward with this in any capacity and there is litigation that results, I will do the best that I can for the city, just as we did the first time. But I'll be happy to serve in any capacity the council wishes.
Thank you, Zach. You still have the floor, Councilmember?
I'm good.
Okay. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. A couple questions. First of all, why did, and I'll let whoever answer that is appropriate, why did city staff contact Petit for an estimate rather than Pace, and then we were presented with those numbers when Pace was the one that had originally done the original estimating of work?
Gene.
Because we're bound by bid laws, and so we felt that it was in our best interest to put together a scope of work. We did that with the attorney's help, and then we went to our on-call consultant, which was Petit. We already had them on board through the RFP process. It's the legal process we had to go to bring them on board. So we had them put together a cost estimate, knowing all along if we move forward with doing any more work on this, if the city is bringing on the consultant, we'll have to go out to an RFP process. And Pace, while they're certainly welcome to put in for that, they may or may not be the consultant we can hire. And remember, we've got to hire on qualifications, not on price. So we can't even talk about price until we select a consultant.
Okay, thank you. The second question I have was not really a question, but Mr. Davison had asked earlier, he might have already gone, but about why we haven't responded. And I think it would be very important for us to respond to that. And I'm happy to do that, or you feel free to jump in. But I think it should be addressed for sure.
Right. The council wanted to have all members present the night that the vote was taken. Our attorney was out for a few days, so we As we were approaching this, one of the questions I had was, what is the mechanism, what is the follow-up to this? And I understood that it was a resolution that would need to be adopted by the council. Zach?
And council, just to clarify, as I believe the council is aware from previous discussions or memoranda, the growth board hasn't specified a particular form of action for that. The contemplation of the state law, as I construe it, is that the council will take some, quote, legislative action, and that typically involves either an ordinance or a resolution. And in my opinion, although there's not a specific RCW that requires a resolution in this context, I think that it would clearly satisfy the legal requirements in this specific context.
Yeah, I just think it's important.
There's a response.
Thank you. I just think it's important for everyone to know that it wasn't that, you know, the mayor's not doing his job or city staff's not doing their job. We knew that we had not formally responded because we were going to draft that resolution. So I just think it's...
It wasn't as simple as sending a letter or sending a copy of the agenda bill that council adopted. We needed to make certain that that our attorney put together the resolution the correct way, that it make it to the agenda where where all seven of you were present, and then it be acted upon. So, go ahead. You still have the floor.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Council members, any other questions? Oh, Council Member Rasmussen.
Thank you. Gene, in your comments regarding the bid laws, so if I understand correctly, it seems obvious, but just clarification, if the city hires the consultant, then we have to go through the bid process, the RFPs. Pastor Minnick, the private party, hires the consultant, hire whoever they want, correct? In this case, Pace?
That's correct.
And that's who we'll use their studies and reviews and move forward with, as long as we review that, correct?
Oh, Zach.
That's my understanding, Councilmember Rasmussen, and just to caveat that, as I think it's been mentioned in previous meetings, regardless of who prepares the environmental document, it ultimately will be owned and signed off on by the city. So it doesn't matter in that respect whether it's prepared by a consultant that has been hired by the applicant or landowner, or whether it was one selected through the city's RFQ process and funded by the city itself. It will ultimately be the city's document, and the SEIS, in this case, of the city's responsible official.
Thank you on that. And, you know, really, this is just part of the cost. There's a lot more costs involved that, you know, I'm curious to see. And I think other council members have mentioned that again tonight. And, you know, the numbers aren't available. This just came to us less than two hours ago. I think there's more information that's not here tonight to look at, but this certainly doesn't tell the whole story yet. So.
Anything else? Okay, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I just want to echo what Councilmember Rasmussen said. This did show a significant impact or potential significant impact to the cost that was given to us 2-3 weeks ago. And I'd be curious to see more information about how this will impact that estimate, and look forward to seeing that in the future, I guess.
And when you say estimate,
the one we had from 3 weeks ago, $135,000 to $195,000, which was expressed as starting over versus the additional information, a comparison between the two.
The property owner would be covering the cost of the pay.
Exactly, which would reduce the city's cost.
Right, so you'd be looking for the legal, which is Councilmember Guerin was asking about.
What are we still left with?
Yes, exactly.
And I'm sorry, go ahead.
And what I heard, there was concern about the legal aspects, and then hearing the additional information about the legal support by this, I'm sorry, the name of the attorney. Their additional help through this, which would not be a city cost, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
But
I look forward to the opportunity to sit down with city staff and go through this documentation and really work out how collaboratively we can do this most effectively, most efficiently. What can I provide in what format, when it simplifies their activities and helps basically just streamline for everybody. Nobody wants to spend extraneous money on this at this point.
I just believe this warrants additional discussion. Thank you.
Okay. Council, any other questions? Councilmember Hanford, I think I saw your hand move first.
Oh, I would just like to encourage staff to get with Pace Engineering and with Attorney Lau, and let's get some actual real numbers that can be presented. And I think just as much as it's frustrating for members of the citizens to come here and hear about this over and over again, it's also frustrating for us to sit here and try and make decisions when we don't have all the numbers. So if there's a way that at our next meeting we can have all the numbers and that are really realistic and we all agree that that's realistic, staff agrees, Attorney Lau agrees, Pace agrees, and I think we can make some better decisions here.
Okay. So what we can do is on the 18th, we can come back with that information and put that on for continued discussion. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. Thanks. I believe we are for the 18th, we have the action for the resolution to communicate back to the Historic Commission Board.
That's tentatively on for the
18th. I think we should leave it there because that may be the action that results, regardless of the numbers that come back. Council may not choose to move forward. And so I think it's appropriate to leave it if we can get those numbers back so that it's there and then it can, you know, we've got these numbers, we have the information, and then, you know, and then that's it. On the 18th, if we can,
we'll put that
if
on the
that's possible, that's great. I thought I already saw it on there, so that's why I brought that up. And not to, you know, drag it out, but to make sure, you know, the point to, you know, with this new information, does that change? It may or may not. Once we see the numbers, then, you know, then there you go. Yeah.
Okay. So what we'll do is we'll have prepared for the packet the numbers. What that'll mean is that staff will be working with the property owner and with Pace and with our attorney to come up with the city's associated costs that are projected for the proposal.
Right.
I will also direct our attorney to, at the same time, prepare the resolution. To have that completed, and again, that'll be in time for the packets so that everybody's able to review the material over the weekend and be prepared for the 18th. Okay. All right, any other questions? Yep.
Thanks.
Council Member Zach.
Thank you, I appreciate the promotion.
The promotion.
Mayor?
Just for my own clarification, Mr. Mayor, when you're referring to the resolution, and I'm happy to draft that.
Yes.
But again, for my own clarification, you're referring to a resolution expressing and effectuating the council's previous vote to notify the Growth Board of the city's disinclination to proceed with the East Monroe Comprehensive Plan and Rezone proposal, essentially formally informing the board that the city intends to reach compliance with the current order of non-compliance by discontinuing all East Monroe efforts and reverting to the existing status quo.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that is the action that's still on the table.
Yes.
And so as part of that action agenda item, we can
I will
talk
have
about
that
those
prepared
numbers.
For the 18th. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, anything else, Council? Okay, thank you very much for coming tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, we're now going to move on to new business. The first item under new business is AB 14-145. And we will, I'm going to pause for about 20 seconds or so, unless Council would like a 2-minute recess.
Please.
Okay, I see a request for a 2-minute recess.
Okay.
We will be in recess until 26 minutes after 8.
Background noise.
Okay, we're going to come back into session. The next item that we have on the agenda is under new business. This is AB 14-145, authorizing the mayor to sign a mobile app contract. And for the record, let's show that Councilmember Gamble's not yet back in, but I'll make a statement when he's back on.
We're doing a presentation?
I think we're ready just to make a motion because he already presented. Both Camp and I, we're just going to make a motion.
And how long is your presentation?
Hey.
I can do it for 10 minutes.
I think we have council members that are ready to propose action.
If they, well, I mean, something's been prepared, then I certainly want to honor the time that it took to put it together. No. I sense a positive outcome. So yeah, there we go.
If you could keep it a brief presentation, that would be appreciated.
There we go.
Thank you, sir. I think there's an interest in seeing what it does.
Yes.
All right, so I'll just kind of breeze through this. What we're proposing to the city is a subscription to our app. It's a smartphone app, runs on both the Android and the Apple platform to help promote everything that makes Monroe great. I just moved here from Minnesota, so I'm learning very quickly. I do live in Snohomish, but spend all my time in Monroe. You guys have everything that we need. But the hard thing is finding what's going on in the city, where it's happening, when it's happening, because there's so many different organizations that have it going on. So the app is named the Monroe Smartphone App. You guys can choose what you actually want to call it. But when people go to the App Store, type in Monroe, Washington, this app will pop up. We're not advertising us. We're advertising Monroe. The agreement that we have with the city is you're one of the first cities in Washington that will be going onto the app. So we do need some base cities so that way we can use the information that we get from your city to get other cities on board in the state of Washington. The way that we do that is we waive all the fees for the city of Monroe. You guys promote your own app through all the things that you're already doing. Utility billings, signage, newsletters, signature lines of city employee emails, things of that nature. The app is available for download for residents and visitors at no charge on either of the app stores. Some of the features that we have an event calendar, and we claim to have the first complete event calendar. We actually put a staff member here in the city. Their sole job is to work with businesses, nonprofits, the city, and anybody else that could possibly have an event going on in the city. We want to make sure that we have all of that information by scraping websites in the city, contacting people, meeting with people, and making sure that any visitor that comes into town and pulls up our event calendar, they're going to know exactly what's going on, where, and how to get to it. We also have a little business search. A big part of every city is businesses, so we want to make sure that we're promoting everything that makes the city great, which are the businesses. We do that through location-based marketing. So when a user is using our app phone or our smartphone app, they can very quickly search for a business by category, by product, by type, or by location. So if they're walking through the city, they can hit what's nearby me for restaurants. It'll pop up, show them right on a map what's nearby, and they can get quick directions. We also have all the city information that people can need. How to get a hold of the council members, who are the council members, who are the different department heads, what are their phone numbers, email addresses, addresses. That city information is updated by us, so we're not taking any additional staff time. However, we are going to make sure that we have that information approved by you. We also have Notify City feature in the app where if people are out and about and they see a pothole and a stoplight or anything that you guys want to have reported to the city, it's with the tap of a finger. They choose what they're reporting and hit submit. It includes the GPS location of the event. They can also include a photo, and they can submit it anonymously, but otherwise it will include their information from their registration with the app. Big thing with parks and recreation, every park, every facility that we have in the city of Monroe will be listed in the app based on GPS as well. They'll also be able to pull up parks by features. If they're looking for a park that has a basketball court, we're going to be able to identify that for them and send them directions to that park. School information. I'm a single dad of four girls. I only care about the schools that my kids go to. I don't care about all the other schools in the city. So if we make sure that the users of the app are able to identify the schools that are important to them, events that are going on at those schools will only show up for their schools. That way they're very quickly able to identify the ESPN social that's coming up with things of that nature. We also have a new resident welcome kit, which is huge for the city, businesses, utilities, and that new resident. When you move into town, you download this app, it'll prompt you to log in. We'll know whether you've logged in before or not. It will then ask you, are you a resident, a new resident, or a visitor? If you're a new resident, it'll provide you some additional information in regards to the utility companies that you need to contact to get set up in the city. and some special offers from local businesses. One thing I just want to clarify very quickly is no business is permitted to be in this app unless they are located in the city of Monroe, and that determination of the city of Monroe is really up to all of you. We did have a request to include some things outside of the city of Monroe that really benefit you guys as well, so that's really up to the city. We also have public alerts. If we have things going on, road closures, school closures, the city, the police department, the fire department, they all receive their own login, or we can tie into systems that you already have, so that way you can have pop-up alerts pop right up on people's phones in the event that you need to get something out to residents quickly. We'll skip over that. We do use Facebook login for people to register with the app, or they can do it the old-fashioned way with an email address and password. We use Facebook because it provides us some demographic information about the people that are logging in to provide reporting to the city on who's going where and what they're doing. We're not going to provide any information which is included in the documents or privacy policy. We don't provide any personal information about any of our users to anybody, including the city. We will comply with all data requirements of the state of Washington, but we are not going to be reporting on where John went for dinner. We also have a huge social media aspect to it. And this is free for use for nonprofits, the city, and any of the entities of the city. When you show up at a business, we have a device called a beacon. It's a location-based device, broadcasts a Bluetooth signal anywhere from 3 inches to 80 feet. So we can use that at parks, the city hall, events, and when people come in contact with that or a GPS marker for the park, you can have it welcome them to the park, give them some information about the park, and when they leave, more importantly, we can ask them how much fun they had at the park. When we ask them that, if they give us a positive response, it's going to put a post out on their social media page to everybody that they know, tell them what a great time that they had at the park here in Monroe. If they give a negative response, it does not make a post on social media, but it will send a notification to whoever you designate to receive that notification so they can find up and find, or they can follow up and find out what went wrong. That beacon technology that I was talking about is also available for the businesses. Every business that subscribes to the app to have their business included receives one of those beacon devices included in their subscription. They put that at their door of their business, which allows them, while people are walking down Main Street, to reach out to those people on the street and say, hey, I exist. Come in, I got a special deal for you. Just check me out. Trying to get some more exposure for the local businesses. When they leave that business, the business has the same capability of having the survey pop up and ask what type of experience they had and spread that news about their business on social media. An example of the business page, they get a full graphic up top along with their address, phone, website. If you tap the Facebook button, they'll get an instant like on their Facebook page. You tap the Twitter button, they'll automatically follow your Twitter account. Each business in our version 2, which will be coming shortly after the version 1, will include an event calendar for the businesses just by themselves. Users of the app then can subscribe to that business's event calendar, so that way that will be included right in their main event calendar, but it won't affect anybody else that's using the app. And let's skip over that. The pricing, like I said, the fees are waived for the city. So how do we make money? We make money by getting the businesses on board, which again is our job. We charge $49 per month, and we charge a one-time $49 setup fee, which covers our cost of the beacon and the time of our staff to go out and get them set up. The $49 per month is guaranteed not to go up, because we don't want you to do all the advertising work and then we jack the price on your local businesses. That would kind of defeat the whole purpose. We also do have the Lots of Lakes viral marketing system, which is that survey that pops up, which is an additional cost for the local businesses, but it is not an additional cost for the city or any nonprofits. Nonprofits meaning the YMCA, any nonprofit that is legally a nonprofit, we do not charge because they're a huge part of the community. That's it.
Okay. Council members, do you have any questions? Okay. Is there a motion? Council member Gehring?
Let's go down here. I authorize the mayor to sign the mobile app contract and expressly authorize further minor revisions if deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
Okay, the first from Councilmember Gehring, a second from Councilmember Hanford. You moved to cut a back spot. I almost called you Councilmember. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. And please let the record show that Councilmember Gamble came in at the very beginning of the presentation. Okay, thank you very much for presenting.
You. Thanks.
Thank you.
The next item that we have on our agenda is AB 14-146. This is the draft 2015 Comprehensive Land Use District Map and Policies. Paul.
Good
let's give you all a brief introduction, overview of these materials. My objective tonight is to familiarize you with some of this material in preparation for our joint meeting that we're planning for November 13th with Council, Planning Commission, Park Board, and our citizen. That's where we intend to really get into an in-depth discussion and interaction on all of this material. I want to talk about two things. One is this concept of some district mapping for the city, and the other is focusing on some of these key opportunities. On the map, this is something that tries to describe the form of the community in these general districts. This is pretty high level. What we're thinking is the regional benefit district here, along bisected by Highway 2. We'll get into some more detail on the next map. But this is where everybody comes together, residents, visitors, employees, people that are driving through town and buy gas. This is where all this happens. The hometown district is that whole central part of town that's the older and, say, up to the more recent 90s residential neighborhoods, the downtown, West Main Corridor. This district is distinctly different from this one in lots of different ways. Different character, different functions, different things going on. Another is the Skycomish district, Skycomish Greenway. That's all about the trying to set up this linear system of open space, trails, and access to the river. Again, that's a whole different character and a whole different function from these other areas. And the last would be the North Hill, which encompasses that whole northern area, north of the bypass, north of the fairground, the first area, and so forth. Some of the more recent residential development, primarily pretty much single family, a little different character from these other areas. So that helps kind of set the tone for these different parts of the city. Then it gives us some help in trying to figure out how to best address those areas in the comp plan.
Before you move on to the next map, Councilmember Gehring has a question or a comment.
Yeah, and Paul, this will apply to the next one as well. It's not about changing the address system. Thank you. thank you for reminding me of that. But no, that's not. That one died, thankfully. Yeah. That zip code change still bothers me. All right. Such a dork. Okay, some of the names. Where do we get some of these names? And just, I went to school. I'm a geographer. I'm a map guy. And a sense of place in neighborhoods that you're in is one of the areas that I studied as part of urban planning as well. And so when I look at this, we've got this hometown district, and I'm just downtown is so different from Freelands. And already what we've talked about is if we're going to be making policies or coming up, creating, updates to the comprehensive plan, policies from downtown aren't going to be the same as those in the Freelands. And so I don't. That there needs to be a couple more than just four. And I know a lot of thought went into this, and there's workshops and stuff. Four seems a little too simplistic to me as I look at this. And specifically with Southwest Monroe, that's an area we've talked about for, perhaps, industrial or even bigger commercial, which isn't necessarily a hometown thing, but actually it's regional because people are cutting through. And so I'm just kind of curious about Southwest. And I'll just be honest, I've always hated the name North Hill. But, how else do you describe it? East Monroe is not, East Monroe should be, East Monroe. And policies that might be implemented there, I would see that. I mean, that's just a completely different character, completely different type of neighborhood than the much newer development that's everywhere else. That really is what we've called North Hill in the past. And then Robin Hood, I don't think we can make any policies for Robin Hood, can we? Because it's not actually in the city limits. I see it all yellow up there in the North Hill, but
in the UGA.
It's in the UGA, and so and maybe so we address it that way if it was ever to come in. Is there those are just some of my initial comments. I could see like maybe six or even seven different. And I know you get four. Maybe the intent is to leave it, kind of at a higher level. But specifically when I look at the hometown one, I'm thinking I can see three in there that to me would be legitimate, and I'm not trying to discount anything that was done. Maybe a little bit more on why that's all lumped in on one.
This was intended to be just a very high level, very general race. The second map is the one that starts to break down the sub areas within those districts.
Right.
You talk about like downtown, right, some of the neighborhoods versus the Frylands. But this is meant to just begin to set the plate for, in a very general way, that we have these general districts. It's part has to do with age, part has to do with the general function of the place. And as a step toward the next map, which gets into more of the detail and the breakdown, and that's that breakdown is what's really important.
Mm-hmm.
This map is not intended to be used for nothing more than just a reference that we're going through this process. But what we want to do is get to the second map, which will be included as part of the comp plan.
And that answers my question. Perfect.
Right to the future.
Perfect.
Land use plan.
Okay. Very good.
Before you move on, how is this map going to be used then in the comp plan? A lot of work went into putting this together. There are labels here. Councilmember Gehring shared some concerns. And how is this map going to be incorporated into the comp plan documents? Is this just a pretty picture showing different regions, or how is this going to become implemented?
We're not intended to use this particular map in the comp plan document. Our intent is to use the second map with
okay.
a more detailed, finer breakdown as a precursor to the land use, future land use map, and the policies that are to be driven for or derived for each of those sub areas. And surely there will be some distinctions within each district that we can talk about. But like I say, it's really not our intent to. This could be a little confusing, but I'm using it as a crutch, I guess, to begin to introduce the second map at this point.
Okay. Yeah, I'm good.
So. Any other questions about this map before we move on? Okay. Please continue. Thank you, Paul.
This begins to give a little more finer definition within these general districts. The regional benefit district, this entire area through here, losing my laser, this entire area right along Highway 2, as I said, where all these different people come together, whether I live here or not, whether I work here or I come here for a special event at Lake Tye, that's the area that brings different folks together for different purposes. It's really all about, it's all about commerce. It's about recreation. It's about employment. We've got this North Kelsey area, which is the major commerce area in town that draws both residents and folks from out of town. The fairgrounds, huge tourism destination. First airfield here, which is something we're going to talk about a little bit more. And our job center. This is our primary place where people come to town to work, whether we live here or commute from outside of town. So this is really something that draws from the entire valley. And the idea here is that we recognize the basic function of it that way, and we try to develop policies that and implementation that enhances this commerce activity, enhances the use of the fairground and First Air, and promotes job growth in that Frylands Industrial Park. It's really all about tapping into and improving this. It's basically what is an auto-oriented environment in terms of commerce, and how those areas work with each other within the district, and what it means in terms of connecting these different places together. So it's still a little bit of high level thinking. The hometown district, this central district here, really is all about the residential neighborhoods, and we've got some different areas within this. We've got the downtown here, which is distinctly different from North Kelsey. It's why I said it's another district that ties more closely to the area, older area of town. Objective being to, through our planning efforts, keep this area vital, keep it successful as a commerce center, revitalize, energize the downtown area. If you recall, there's the two things that kept coming out on top through the workshops this past year in Storefront Studio was walkability within the entire community and the downtown, where there was really the two things that kept rising to the top as what folks wanted to happen for Monroe. Within this hometown district, downtown is here. There's a I'll call it a sub area here, the older residential part that's just immediately adjacent to downtown in the south and west. That area is a little bit different in many ways than the area between downtown and say 179th or Kelsey over here. But these are right adjacent to downtown. I mean, it's very, very walkable, very accessible. This area, and we're promoting infill here, particularly in the this part of the downtown area, trying to revitalize that with the Fremont project. This neighborhood here is a different, a little distinctly different from these other neighborhoods. This one is a great candidate for some additional infill. There's some areas that have septic tanks. We'd like to promote redevelopment, maybe a little bit higher density. We've had a number of short plats all through this area through here that are bringing in a little higher density single family units in comparison to what has been there traditionally. And this, you know, this area evolved over probably evolved first, and the growth has slowly come this direction. Now here we've got 522, which is obviously a physical barrier, what splits these neighborhoods. But and the Frylands is the Frylands. It's what, 20
years old.
30 years. It's pretty mature. It's going to be it's going to call its valley for a long, long time. The what needs to be done here is to preserve it and enhance that walkability, make it more accessible with a number of different ideas about cutting under 522 and so forth. But we're trying to recognize these different areas within this district and how they might be treated, what we want to try and emphasize. The West Main Street corridor, as you know, has had a fair amount of activity with Housing Hope existing and coming on board. We've had a couple of other projects that have been put forth as a possible redevelopment projects out on the West Main. That is a distinct part of this district. It's a little different from downtown. It's different from these other areas. This is more commercial related, a little different character, a little different function. So it helps us try to formulate what all these pieces are that we're trying to deal with. The Skykomish district, the Greenway, is really all about green space, natural open space, active recreation areas, trying to connect these areas along the river. We've got the future Cadman site here. There is, you know, the Cadman operation remains here, but future park here, Sky Valley, Al Borland through here. And part of this, what came out of the studio workshop, was really dramatically trying to connect downtown and Al Borland within our ability to make some improvements there to tie that downtown area to the river, to recognize the river as a real amenity, and build on that, and make some pretty strong connections all through here in terms of trails and access and the ability to get back up in these other parts of the community. The last one, the North Hill, that's really about continuing the kind of development that we have there, to a large extent, but perhaps trying to infill the vacant, while it's not infill, it's a large tracts of undeveloped vacant grounds at a slightly higher density, but single family. Now maybe there's some means to incorporate some, I'll call it neighborhood commercial or some kind of support services up in the North Hill area, but it's this is distinctly different from these residential areas as they are within each other. But think about this area, this area. They're separated by the regional district. They're on the other side of the bypass. Part of the concept here is to maybe take advantage of that bypass and build this trail system through here, tied in with the Centennial, tied in north and south through the community. But that begins to give us a means of getting our arms around some of these different areas, and then how are we going to treat them in the future land use map, and how are we going to treat them with policies and with programs for each of those areas as we go forward. Some questions about this map.
Okay, before you move on.
Not a lot of information here.
Right, before you move on to those, Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. Yeah, questions about this. Paul, I mean, a lot of what we're going to be doing is you're going to be bringing, I'm assuming, you know, policies back for council approval with regard to this. And as I'm thinking, revitalization of downtown, and, you know, at the risk of being repetitive, you can't policy that into happening necessarily. You need investment in downtown, and so I'm just curious how is that going to be? I would expect to see that incorporated. That at least we've taken that into consideration when we're finalizing a comprehensive plan. We're talking about, you know, the direction for our downtown. We can make it look great, but ultimately we need building owners who are willing to make improvements to their buildings, and we have no control over that. You know, those things. I mean, there's a few of them where it's lipstick on a pig in some places. Fremont Street looks great. You know, but, you know, and that's one thing, but, you know, Main Street doesn't, you know, and it's different than Snohomish Main Street. And so, and then also some of the setbacks that we have. So if you're looking at the downtown area right along the river there, some of the setbacks are so big that it makes some of those lots unbuildable. And so, you know, I'm just curious about, you know, are we going to incorporate in ways to mitigate that, or mitigation will be seriously considered to make this happen? Because if we're really going to revitalize that area, we have to make sure that the policies allow for it. And right now, with the shorelines from Al Borland, the setbacks and things like that, it's not. And so we've got this area that's actually conflicting with something we want to do here. And I'm hoping that those kind of things are going to be remedied. So you talk about policies, you know, to revitalize downtown, and some of that has to be an investment from the city in marketing that area, and hey, we want you. And whether it's EB5, and I've beat that horse, that's a federal program, you know, I don't care who brought it to council, I think it's a good idea, okay? And so, I mean, you know, can we consider things like that? And especially First Air Field, that's another one that you have listed here. We don't own that piece of land. So I'm curious about what kind of policies, you know, we're going to be doing. Do we want to leave it an airport, things like that? You know, does the landowner, you know, those kinds of things as well. Lots of questions about that. But a policy to revitalize downtown has to include, you know, us getting out there, in my opinion, and saying, hey, we've got this great place, you know, come help us do this. You know, here's what we want to do. And, you know, getting, whether foreign investment, domestic investment, whatever it is. But that's how, in my mind, that's going to happen. And so I'm hoping that we're able to incorporate that in some. I think it would be an incomplete document without considering that in there somewhere. So I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. But the shoreline is definitely a concern to me. If we're talking about policies revitalized downtown, the buffers, it makes that east end of the orange red area up there. You're not going to be able to do a lot unless there's a specific way, you know, unless we've thought about, hey, here's, you know, maybe in advance, hey, here's how you can mitigate that. Right, you know, that kind of a thing. So we can put maybe some nice, you know, I don't know, apartments, multifamily housing that looks over that area and can really enjoy it, but doesn't, you know, cause an issue. So anyway,
one of the questions that I would ask to follow up on what Councilmember Gearing was saying is that I believe that the scope of work includes an economic development component.
Yes.
Okay, so as part of that economic development component, one of the concerns I have, coming also from a planning background, is coming up with pretty maps and pretty policies, but no follow-through, no implementation. I think that's part of what Councilmember Gehring is getting at, is that through that economic development scope, through putting together this comp plan, will there be, as people say, tactical things that we can do to promote economic development, to promote business development, to promote downtown revitalization? Can we expect that sort of thing in a future document?
The implementation part of it, which follows some of this high-level policy-related, the real bricks and mortar are going to come in the implementation. And this is going to be a huge part of this comp plan, as to how we get, if we set these goals and we set these needs and desires, how do we get there? That's going to be by way of specific programs or maybe some specific sub-area plans that will need to be done to vet it a little more thoroughly. But specific actions, steps, programs to respond to the policies that are going to drive these places. Without that, it'll sit on the shelf. So I think that's going to be the biggest part, and the most important part, in terms of how we, if we set forth this agenda, then the most important part is how are we going to accomplish that agenda? What are the steps to make it happen?
And so that'll be part of a future document that'll come before us. Okay.
Are the shoreline buffers from like Woods Creek, are these things that we are going to be reconsidering as well? Is that like something that's not going to change as part of the comp plan process? Again, just when we're talking about revitalization of downtown, there's things that as it sits today would conflict with doing that within our own documents. And so I don't know if that's something we're going to, it's like, I don't, whatever the number is today, you know, should it really be that number? Does that get revisited during this, or is that's just kind of what it is, and find a way to mitigate it if you want to do whatever project, you know, you're talking about? Do we revisit that now or not?
All these things are going to have to be addressed to some extent. And
okay.
Some will need further follow through in more detail. But the intent that we get into this really in more, much more in-depth discussion at our joint meeting on the 13th with the Consultants on Board and the other groups to ask these kinds of questions and start engendering this kind of discussion in more detail.
I think one of the questions that Councilmember Gehring was looking probably for is that at the comp planning level, you're going to be dealing with the more broad policies, and I think that the buffers that he's talking about are more from development regulations.
Maybe that is, okay.
And so when do you anticipate that we'll be getting to the development regulations to explore changing buffers and doing buffer width averaging and whatnot to take into account best available science or whatever? I think that's what he's looking for. The comp plan's not necessarily going to address that, but when do you anticipate that we'd have development regulations that we could look at?
Thanks. The comp plan should set policies that give direction on what needs to be implemented. Once that comp plan is adopted, I think what we're thinking is that we immediately begin the implementation phase, which is the zoning, any rezoning, and the development regulations. Those are going to be crucial, number one, because they all need to be consistent, comp plan all the way down. And that's where, if we decide in the comp plan that we want to explore opening up El Borland to the downtown area, to look at development regulations that would in some ways help make that happen. That's where the detail is really going to come out. But if that's not an expressed desire and sense of direction, then we won't spend time on implementing something that has not carried some weight and wants to be brought forward from the policies.
Let me ask one more follow-up question that I know the answer to, but I'd like council to hear the answer as well. So the development regulations that we talked about with the buffer widths and whatnot, those are not part of the scope of work for the comp plan update.
That's correct.
And so one thing that council should be aware of from a budgetary standpoint and from a policy standpoint is that you are seeing maps, you're going to see policies and see objectives, but to implement these things, there will need to be modifications to our development regulations. And that is a follow-up packet that in some jurisdictions might happen not quite simultaneously because you don't want to spend a lot of money on development regulations that the comp plan, you end up passing something different. But the development regulations frequently will occur very close to, like within a few to several months of the comp plan being revised. Otherwise, you have a comp plan that's telling you one thing and development regulations that are telling you something a little bit different. So whether it's our staff that does that work, which happens in some jurisdictions, or it's a consultant, that's something to be aware of from a budgeting perspective. Mid-2015 or if we wait into 2016. So that is important because it gets to the buffer question.
Make it real. I just have one more.
Go for it.
One more. And Paul, I appreciate all the information. In number two, on page 405, number two in the following section, and I'll just bring it up in advance because you haven't got to that page yet, but it says current non-employment uses in the area need to give way to job-related uses wherever possible. I was just curious, there's just something about that when I first read it. It was like, what are we doing here? What are we saying here? So when you do get to that, maybe you can... That's in the Freiland section right in the middle of the paragraph.
Page 405.
Yeah, so current non-employment uses in the area. I just wanted to know what that meant. I mean, that's residential, and I certainly don't think we see that changing necessarily. So I was curious what job-related uses in what is primarily a residential area means versus non-employment, which is kind of what we see today. So I didn't understand what that sentence meant. So just whenever you get there, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, please continue. Thank you.
I was going to say this is a sequence. Comp plan and zoning / development regulations are really together, but the development regulations do need to follow fairly quickly to get toward that implementation. And if I come in with an application for development A, it needs to be, if that's supported in the comp plan, also needs to be supported in the development. That's going to take some time. I can see where it's going to basically end up with a varying depths of a rewrite of our development code. There's much of it that is good, and there's much of it that needs to be rewritten. And all that's going to be driven by what comes out of this comp plan. And it's going to take more than 6 months. It could take a year. And we'll likely take either some additional staff devoted to that, staff member for that, or some combination of staff and some consultant time to make that happen.
Thank you.
The lack of meetings that lag months or even years behind on their disconnect between the comp plan and the implementing tool of the development, but we don't want to have that.
Any other questions on the map here? And then are you going to proceed into the key opportunities memo then?
Okay. These are areas that have been identified. These really came out of the workshops and the storefront studio, places that we want to focus on as opportunities. These are special places, special features, special areas, activities that are happening now that we want to capitalize on, and we also want to create some new opportunities where we can to support this vibrant community. What it's about is strengthening what we have now with these opportunities. And there's some specific things that we want to talk about in this joint meeting in a lot more detail. The first one, first air field. The question that's being asked there that we all need to think about is, what's the future of First Air Field? The comp plan now lends quite a lot of support to the idea of preserving, expanding this airport, making it a more functional, viable, economically feasible place, as opposed to the possibility of
closing out the airport functions in favor of some form of redevelopment in the employment center or something in between. I did have a meeting with Dr. Hadley a while ago. He's been in that, owned that airport for, what, 40-some years. And he would like to see it continue and expand and become a real airport. And there's been, what, two or three inquiries to that, which have not gotten too far. But he's also open with the writing center possibility of redevelopment. If a party comes along that has that kind of focus, the future is could be any number of things. But I think we'll need to get into some discussion about how we all feel about the airport. Is it important to keep that, or should we shift direction toward some more viable uses that don't depend on airport function? And that perhaps can make a more of a tie to the paradigm. That's one of the first ones that we want to have some discussion on at this joint meeting. The Frylands. Frylands, as I said, is just our primary job center. And what we need to do there, what we should be thinking about, is how we continue supporting these existing businesses, how we attract more businesses to that place, that area. And right now there's a lot of non-employment uses there, uses that are not primary jobs. There's a lot of retail. There's one or more churches, more lower level employment operations, and what we're trying to do is promote more primary jobs. And a lot of the buildings, a lot of the land is underutilized. Could at some point be ripe for redevelopment. Some parts of that area are aging, and the way the market goes, it may reach a point where it is possible to consider redevelopment and to re-energize the employment out there. This is in all about that economic development aspect of this. And a lot more discussion about that at the joint meeting as well. I'll just run through these real quick, then we can come back. The other one is the vital Highway 2 corridor and vital downtown. Objective being that they can both exist with each other, and they can both be successful. The whole idea is, how do we make that happen? We did have a meeting with folks from the fairgrounds last week, and talked about a number of things related to the fairgrounds, things like about all the expansion that they're thinking about, expanded facilities for the program, for the animal program, for maintenance space, office space. Trail along Highway 2, much more expanded marketing. Apparently the fairgrounds does not do a nearly as good a job as they could in terms of marketing and everything that happens there year-round. They're really focusing on that year-round activity out there. Beautifying Highway 2 in front of sound walls, trails, lots of improvements there, which would really commingle pretty well with things like our employment and the North Kelsey area, and those activity centers. And the downtown. You know, there are different places. North Kelsey and downtown are very different. They function totally differently. We got big box, auto-oriented, the new Walmart coming in. Downtown is a totally different character, and there's really no reason why they can't both be successful. But in downtown, you're right, that we rebuilt Fremont Street. We're investing to protect some money in this roundabout on the west side of the downtown area. What it's going to take is just a program. It's going to take grassroots up involvement by people expanding their business, investing in their businesses. The public side can only do so much. But we need to be setting the support for that to help make it happen. Spekhomish, all through here, as I said, it's really all about natural open space, active recreation, it's a serious, could be a serious draw for tourism and for recreation for folks that, that live here. The whole idea is to really strengthen the ties between places like El Borland. El Borland's a really somewhat underused. I know it's mostly natural, but it has the potential for some limited improvements that would draw more people there and make it a safer place. A lot of people have perceptions that it's not a very happy place right now. But to really capitalize on what we've got, it's a huge amenity, tremendous amenity that we need to take advantage of. Lastly, the Park Place Middle School. We know that the school district would like to do a pretty ambitious project with that middle school, a $50 million renovation, expansion, new construction. That I see as a trigger, potentially, for some related energy around that campus. That area is ripe for redevelopment as a commercial node, I'll call it. We've got downtown and perhaps a node at 179th and then perhaps at 522 in Main Street. All that might have a little different form in between them. But trying to capitalize, recognizing that intersection, that area, as an opportunity that we can create something different, something that's gonna revitalize that part of the city, and perhaps some energy that can be pulled by this potential campus for City Hall, Monroe School District, and Everett Community College. That's a major opportunity that's going to draw more people, more activity, more redevelopment, more people living there. So all these things are these opportunities. You know, the folks in the workshop so forth identified these things and we brought them forth as things that we really need to be thinking about in much more detail and joining me before we can get a really good discussion going. So with that, questions, some discussion?
Council members, questions, comments? Okay, just want to touch on a couple more things. Everybody, I want to clarify or just want to highlight the fact that while we're looking at land use here, looking at policies, and we're looking at potential choices that council will have the opportunity to make over the next several months, that there are other documents that are components to this, and I don't want you to lose sight of that. There are utility plans. There's a transportation plan. Could you go through what the plans are, Brad or Paul? Parks plan?
Yeah, water system plan, sewer system plan, stormwater system plan, transportation plan, and parks plan, and comprehensive plan.
And the conference plan, okay. And then after that, you're looking at development regulations at some point. So just want to, so that you understand that there's sort of a bunch of different plans you're going to be looking at over the next, from now until, these are supposed to be adopted in June?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to give you a little bit of context that there's more than just these pictures on the wall. So
this is really the beginning. We spent the last several months getting our toes in the water through all these workshops, and now we're at the point where it's suddenly start to come together and we'll have something to work with and react to and make some decisions on.
All right. The next meeting will be on the 13th. That's a joint meeting.
13th of November.
And the time is?
At 7 o'clock, Park Place Middle School. We've been there before. Drama room on the West End building. We're hoping to get good representation from Council, Park Board, Planning Commission, and Citizens Group. They will all have seen this and discussed it before we come together on the 13th. I think everybody will be well prepared for some really good interaction.
Okay. And our consultant will be there to facilitate. All right, Council. Any seen other questions on this? So thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Well done.
Thanks, Paul. Okay, the next item that we have on the agenda, we do have two members of the public, I understand, that are here for the Chain Lake Estates. Would Council be okay with us moving the final action, AB 14-150, to have that be the next item on the agenda.
You bet.
Sure.
So we're going to go ahead and make that move. We're going to proceed to final action 14-150. We'll then proceed back up to new business. So this is AB 14. Yeah, okay, AB 14-150, ordinance number 015-2014, approving Chain Lake Estates. This is the final plat, PRD, first and final reading. So, Paul, is this you?
Yes.
Okay, Paul, go ahead.
Here tonight for approval of the final plat. This is a final plat and PRD, plat residential development. I have a picture I can pop on the wall. I know it's in your packet, just for reference. This is a corner of northeast corner of Chain Lake and Mountain Ridge. I think you all know where it is. And Rick Hansen is actually building houses as we speak, building some model homes. 26 lots. It's been through the entire process, and most all of the improvements are complete. Some minor things like what, some fencing, gates, and road striping, some landscape-related work that has been bonded. And it's ready for final plat approval and recording. We're recommending that you do take action on this, and we're asking for a first and final reading on this, as this is an ordinance that would normally take two readings. But in the interest of moving this project ahead, and I know the builder has people that are very anxious to get some homes built. And especially now, since we have 2 weeks before the next council meeting, we're asking you to do the first and final on this final plat. I'd certainly take any questions that you might have.
Council, do you have any questions? Okay, is there a motion? You see two requested actions. Councilmember Camp?
Thank you. I move to adopt ordinance number 01/2014, adopting Monroe Municipal Code Chapter 2.80, establishing.
What the heck?
Councilmember Camp? I think the first request, if you would like, would be to waive the council rules of procedure requiring a second reading of the
That's
ordinance.
What I'd like to do. Where do I go?
Second.
Number one.
So moved is what I heard Councilmember Camp say. So that's a first from Councilmember Camp, second from Councilmember Gehring. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. The next item is number two. Councilmember Camp had already started that with adopt ordinance number 015-2014, approving the final plat and final planned residential development PRD for the subdivision known as Chain Lake Estates PL 2013-01, setting forth supportive findings, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
So move.
Okay.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Camp, a second from Councilmember Gehring. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move back up in the agenda to new business number four, AB 14-148, discussion elected and appointed officials compensation.
Thank you, Mayor.
Yep.
Several weeks ago, Council requested that staff look into this, and we did some pretty extensive research on not only the elected officials compensation, but the boards and commissions as well. We also reached out to MRSC and looked at what they had on the books and found that there are a lot of local jurisdictions that do have salary commissions for elected officials, so council members. The Planning Commission members, the research showed us that in most instances the commissions were not compensated. However, in Monroe here, they've been compensated for years, and we attribute that to the amount of work that the Planning Commission does put in our growing city. So we discussed this in the Finance Committee this evening. The one question that did come out of there is regarding if the council did want to move forward on a salary commission, could members from an existing board such as
Civil Service.
Thank you.
Civil Service.
Serve on this board, and I talked to the city attorney about that briefly, and because there are two different animals, it would be a separate board that would handle the salary commission. So, again, we did talk about this in the Finance Committee, so I will turn it over to the chair, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you.
Before we proceed, our city attorney, Zach, has something.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just to follow up on Gene's comments, I haven't had a chance to review that issue before tonight and wasn't aware that it was before the council, but just reading specifically from the language of the state law governing salary commissions, the members of the commission may not include any officer, official, or employee of the city. And because of that, I would consider the plain language of the statute as excluding the potential for members of the city's civil service commission to have dual service on this board as well.
Okay.
Okay. Does the committee have anything to report out?
That was the question I had. No, this is all covered as Gene laid it out, and I believe we were all unanimous. I'm going ahead with this.
So I see a nod from Councilmember Gamble.
Or he's choking. Oh.
He's fishing his candy bar. Baby Ruth in my mouth.
I think he did it on purpose.
No, I all I was going to say is that I know that we actually, this goes back to last year when we reviewed this, and the, you know, the action or the council sent to the finance committee, it took us a while, you know, to basically the desire to have a salary commission so that we can be removed from the process, we can have input from the community on this going forward, and it would build a mechanism so that it would be checked on a yearly basis to make sure that we don't get ever out of sorts. But that's all I wanted to add.
Oh, no, and then thank you. And in addition to that, just include, since the Planning Commission does receive a stipend, to have them included as part of the target of this commission. It just seemed to make sense.
Do council members have any questions of the committee or of staff or of our attorney? Okay. Is there a requested action that somebody would like to make a motion on?
As soon as it pulls up here.
Gene?
Basically, it's just, do we have consensus that council would like us to
need a motion?
Put together a salary commission at this point in time. They can make a motion if they wish.
Or I can just give direction. We can go ahead and start the
work. Go ahead.
Okay, we're going to go ahead.
Great.
So I'll direct staff to start the work to prepare an ordinance to set up a salary commission and bring that back. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next item that we have on our agenda is, we're now under final action again. This is the first one. This is AB 14149, Ordinance Number 014, 2014, Establishing a Municipal Court, Final Reading. Who has that? Chris? Oh, just kidding. Pam? Pam, you're up. Yes.
Second.
Come on up.
Excuse me. Light is requesting the final reading of the municipal, the ordinance establishing the municipal court and approval from the council.
Council members, do you have any questions, concerns, comments? Okay, seeing none, is there a motion? Council member Hanford?
I'll move to adopt ordinance number 014-2014, adopting Monroe Municipal Code, Chapter 2.80, establishing the Monroe Municipal Court, amending the provisions of MMC 10.22.010 to designate the court as the Traffic Violations Bureau of the City, repealing and reenacting the provisions of MMC 9.02.080, violation penalty to conform to RCW 3.50.440, providing for severability and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Second.
I have a first from Council Member I'm sorry, and a second from Council Member Rasmussen. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're now going to move on to council member reports. We have, we'll start off with the Finance Committee, and then we'll go to individual members. So Finance HR Committee, do you have anything else to report? You've reported on the Salary Commission?
That's all we have.
All you had. Okay. Let's go ahead and go through council member reports. Council member Gearing.
Thanks. Very exciting World Series. My childhood favorite team, the Kansas City Royals, 90 feet away from the bottom of the ninth, tying it up. They did not, but it certainly made October fun. Certainly would hope to love to see the Mariners do that sometime soon. So, again, that was a lot of fun. football team, got a playoff game Friday night. It's all the way south of Puyallup in Graham, which is a heck of a long ways away, but it's been fun to see how well our fall sports teams have done. I think almost every sport, I think except for tennis, went to at least districts to compete further. So it's an exciting time from that aspect. Just everything that this time of year and sports in the community does to bring everybody together. It's really fun. It's exciting. And I think actually tonight was the girls' district volleyball game. I think it was somewhere on the other side of the county. But, a fun time. And a bummer to see fall sports end, but that means winter sports are coming. So more to look forward to. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
No report.
Councilmember Davis.
Nothing to report.
Councilmember Camp.
Nothing tonight.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Actually had the opportunity to go and visit a couple classrooms at Frank Wagner today for work, teaching a little financial literacy, banking. It's always a lot of fun doing that. It's always very impressive in what kids these days think of money and savings, and think back to when I was their age, and we didn't know the plastic cards. We knew the paper checks, and it'll be even more interesting to see what next generation things. So had a great time. Kids were awesome. Teachers were great. And that's all I have.
Okay, cool. Councilmember Hanford.
Nothing tonight, thanks.
Okay. Going to the back of the room, Ben. Pam. Diane?
Nothing tonight.
Okay. Paul?
No, just appreciate your interest tonight and look forward to a really good meeting on November 15th.
Everything's going in development right now. Walmart, and I know that we had questions about Walmart at the end of the meeting last week. How are things going with that?
The site work is behind schedule. They're really struggling with the weather and trying to get the ground clear. Paving is the biggest hurdle right now. I think they did move back their opening date just somewhere in the week of Thanksgiving. The interior, I believe, is pretty much set to go. It's been stopped. They've had people working there. They're working hard to get the paving done. They're under a temporary certificate of occupancy right now, which allowed us to have the Walmart associates in the building. But they'll need to finish quite a bit more work before they get their public opening.
Okay. Another project of interest. How are things going with H3O and the wakeboard park?
Nothing has changed since we last spoke about it. We still have not received any further plans from them. Rick, our military chief, pokes them on a fairly regular basis, but no response as of yet.
Okay.
Not to mention that the Bear Mountain subdivision just west of the foothills has made their submittal just a couple of days ago, and I think this will hopefully bring a close to the review process. We'll set a hearing date, and that project will be able to move forward.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Paul in development before I move off, Paul? Okay. Mike, how are things? Okay, I understand somebody was doing donuts or something in our dog park a few weeks ago. Has that been
We've had a few incidents of that turfing, not only at Skyrocket Park, but also Roundup.
Mm-hmm.
They noticed that by high school.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're obviously working with the police, and at some point, they'll get so soft. But we're having that issue.
Okay. But was everything fixed from the last incident with the dog park, or?
Yeah, we've made the repairs.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thanks, Mike. Brad, how are things going with you?
Very good, thank you.
Good. And how about in your department? Okay.
Nothing else to report, though.
Okay. We had somebody come in and talk about the water system breakage here in the downtown. Has anything changed with that recently, or Ben or Brad?
No.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Chief, how are things going with you?
Good.
Nothing tonight. Okay. Gene.
Two quick things. Council recently received a couple inquiries by citizens in regard to handicap ramps on Main Street, and another one or two emails regarding concerns from a citizen up in the Roosevelt area.
Foothills.
And I just wanted to ensure council that I've been corresponding with both of those individuals on a pretty routine basis. Just wanted to let you know that.
In your last correspondence with Novak, you let them know that about the discussion that occurred last week and also the fact that it's going to be going to the P4 committee on the 10th.
Correct. And that we're actually doing a citywide audit of all the handicap ramps and that type of thing. Also, I've been pretty engaged with Stephanie.
All right. Sounds good. Any questions for Gene? Gene will be out for the next couple days, so if you have any correspondence or anything that you'd like a quick response on, you know, as usual, you send things to Gene. Just go ahead and again, keep doing what you do, and I'll make certain that that gets forwarded to Brad or to Chief Quinzer or whomever else the correspondence needs to go to. So, okay. You'll be back on Wednesday or Thursday next week?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and move into the extended agenda. I'm sorry, let's go into the agenda, rather, for November 18th, noting that there is no meeting on November 11th. So, draft agenda for November 18th. Gene.
Thank you. First thing we're going to do is confirm appointment, oath of office, municipal court judge, proclamation of Police and Fire Appreciation Week 2014. And a presentation by Sky Valley Food Bank. Mr. Neil Watkins will be here for that presentation. Under public hearing, we have the second public hearing for the 2015 preliminary budget. The consent agenda. Under unfinished business, we have the resolution regarding the East Monroe Growth Management Hearing Board compliance. And we'll have a little bit of additional discussion.
So we're going to go ahead and move that off of the consent agenda. Did you? Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's under
unfinished.
Unfinished. I'm with you.
That's okay.
Perfect where it is, yep.
Yeah. But it sounds like we're going to have a little more discussion on that. And we will bring in cost estimates.
Thank you.
So we'll add that. We'll put that down as the first bullet, and then we'll have the resolution as the second bullet.
Okay.
And then the administrative procedures for registered sex offenders is the third bullet under unfinished.
Perfect.
Okay. Just a second, Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, I just want to be clear too. If we could, when we're bringing forth the estimates for the East Monroe rezone, like we talked about earlier, if we could include the staff, estimated staff time as well. I don't think I was clear on that when I spoke earlier, you know. So not just the attorney fees, but the estimated staff time as well, with Pace's input, with Zach's input, with everyone.
We will do that.
Understood.
Thank you.
And then, under new business, we have the authorized mayor to sign municipal court judge contract. And the P4 committee.
Just a sec. We're also going to have under new business, because we moved it to the 18th, AB 14-147, discussion on elected and appointed official term limits.
Sure. The P4 committee update, and that is actually the meeting is going to be held on Monday at 4 o'clock, is my understanding, and our good friend Brad is going to come in off vacation to fill in for me.
Okay. Does anybody have any comments or requested revisions to the November 18th draft agenda? Okay, I see none. All right, let's go ahead and move on to the extended agenda.
The only thing I wanted to note, which has been said many times, the meeting on the 13th, 7 o'clock, at the school building, Park Place.
Okay. Yes?
May not be able to out of the state on business that week.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and note for the record that Councilmember Gamble may not be here for the November 13th joint meeting.
Ditto with me. I will be out of state.
Okay, same with Councilmember Davis. Any other council members? Okay, I see lights and I should have noticed that.
I may not be able to make that meeting.
Okay, Councilmember Hanford may not be able to be there. Councilmember Camp?
I may be late.
Councilmember Camp may be late, and Councilmember Rasmussen will not be able to be there.
Okay. I will.
So Councilmember Gehring, hopefully Councilmember Cutterback, and I will be there.
Thank you.
Quick question, Liz. The meeting, is this the night of the City of Mill Creek's Snohomish County City's dinner?
It is.
It is.
It is.
Okay. It will be important to send an email expressing condolences that we won't be able to make it to that meeting because
we have this instead.
Yeah, we have this instead. So
I can do that.
I appreciate that. Thank you. All right. Go ahead and continue with the extended agenda. We've crossed some things off of November 18th. And we just went over the draft agenda. The 25th is still a possible cancellation. Is there anybody interested in canceling that at this time? Okay. And does anybody have any questions or any additions or anything to the extended agenda? Okay. I see none. I have no further business this evening. Staff doesn't have any further business. Councilmember Hanford?
Yeah, just for the fact that we're not going to cancel the 25th, I'm assuming that we'll move some of the 18th items over to the 25th.
Or we just haven't canceled it yet.
Yeah, I think, so if we take a look at we looked at the draft agenda before, this evening's agenda we thought was going to go later than 9:37, which is where we are right now. I don't know that that's going to be that late of a meeting on the 18th.
Mayor?
Yes.
I suspect that since we will be getting a lot of information, more information about East Monroe, uh-huh. which is really part of the reason why we're so late,
right.
we may want to leave our options open for the 25th.
25th, okay.
That was
just in case.
That was what I was thinking.
Okay. So would you be interested in moving, because the staff is going to begin preparing the staff briefings for this tomorrow morning for the 18th. So is there an interest in moving anything off of the 18th into the 25th tonight?
We had talked about moving it to December, the first meeting in December, last time, just, you know, so we could keep the 25th open.
Mm-hmm.
No?
No, I guess one question would be how much of the staff is on vacation that week?
Yeah, this Thanksgiving week, yeah. I mean, it's 2 days before, but still, yeah, if you're going out of town, then, yeah.
There's quite a few people probably on vacation now.
So I heard quite a few people, you're echoing, so quite a few people, apparently.
Mm. Mr. Mayor, may I add another point? I don't want to sway this either way, I just want to let you know. For publication of the agenda in the Monroe Monitor, we would actually need to have a final agenda to them before the meeting on November 18th to publish for 11:25. Just a reminder, we are not required to publish in the Monroe Monitor our agendas. But assuming we wanted to have a meeting on the 25th or cancel the meeting on the 25th, the notice to do that would need to be provided to the Monroe Monitor for the meeting on the 18th.
Okay. And which means so we need to know tonight.
That's kind of an internal deadline. Technically, yep. We could decide at the end of this week, but then also preparation of the documents for staff to be able to do that. Just a couple of notes there that might inform your decision.
Okay. So we have a couple of notes. I'm going to take Councilmember Camp first.
I didn't have a look.
Jeff, were you pushing this button again?
Okay. I'd like to move to cancel the November 25th meeting.
Second.
Okay. I have a first to cancel the 25th. I have a second. So from Councilmember Gamble and Councilmember Gehring as the second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Happy Thanksgiving, staff.
All opposed? Okay. Motion passes 6-0. We will cancel the 25th. All right. Shall we keep everything on the 18th that's there?
And if we need to move it to December 2nd, we can
put it on December.
Okay. So the 18th stays as it is. The 25th is now canceled. Is there any other business for this evening? Okay. Councilmember Hanford?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
I have a first to adjourn from Councilmember Hanford. I have a second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much. Have a great evening.